Mirrors and the Earth by Asia Suler. Introduction, A Book of Micah. It's midsummer in the southern Appalachian mountains, and the air has substance. You can feel the water carried on the wind as it brushes past you, like breath on silk. I'm walking in the forest, barefoot and slow. The dense heat has been gentled by the thick canopy, and the soles of my feet are cool against the soil. As I walk, my steps grow slower until I'm finally stopped by wonder. Standing stock still, I look down at the forest floor beneath me and feel the world turn over. Part of my mind knows I'm gazing down at the dirt. But a sudden, delicious sense of vertigo makes me feel as if Earth has been flipped and I'm falling upward into the starlit cosmos. Glittering, glinting everywhere, billions upon billions of flecks of mica wink throughout the forest floor. It looks just like the Milky Way, spilled generously across dark soil. I'm barefoot in the forest, walking among the stars. If you drive north from Asheville into the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, and then hang a hard right, holding on for another half hour of spiderweb turns into the folds of the mountains, you will find yourself at the old Micah Mine. Micah has a deep history in this part of Appalachia. Mining for this mineral was once big business in these mountains. Mica has a unique chemical structure that makes it both an insulator, keeping heat in, and a conductor, letting it pass through. Place a sheet of mica between a hot coal and a cone of incense, and it will transform that tar of herbs into perfectly uncharred ashes. Marketed as isinglass, mica was used to make windows in wood stoves and paneling for the faces of kerosene lamps throughout the 19th and early 20th centuries. For millennia before this, mica was an important ceremonial item among the indigenous peoples of these mountains, including the people of the area now known as Asheville, the Salagi or Cherokee. Carried via pilgrimage and trade routes, mica from the southern Appalachians has been found as far away as the legendary Hopewell Mounds in Ohio. Buried 2,000 years ago within those enormous man-made earthworks are pieces of Appalachian mica, carved into claws, arrows, human bodies, bears, and owls. Some archaeologists hypothesize that the circular-shaped pieces of mica might have been made for mirror-gazing, a divinatory practice that involves peering into a reflective surface to seek visions from the beyond. By the time I made this trip to the mica mine, I had been living in the mountains of western North Carolina for several years, working as an herbalist. Fascinated by all aspects of nature's medicine, I had come to the woods that day with an amiable class of rock hounds to look for a variety of precious stones, including aquamarines and garnets. But as my companions splayed further over the hillside to search through the tailings of the old mine, I couldn't stop gazing into the mica at my feet. Standing there in the forest, a gentle breeze picked up the edges of my faded, cotton-tiered skirt. The braid of my hair, sturdy as rope, down my left shoulder, reached toward the earth. Slowly, I bent down, my skirt pooling like a waterfall around me, and picked up a shard of starlight from the ground. I pried the mica out of its small crater in the soil. It was the thickest specimen I had ever seen, with odd layers sticking out the sides like the pages of a beloved old book. In my palm, its top glinted like a vintage mirror, reflecting the diffuse forest light onto my face. As I turned it, ever so slightly, the stone twinkled at me, and I flushed with a kind of childlike pride. It felt like getting a wink from my granny while digging in the dirt in my Sunday best. In that moment, I became aware of two things: the heaviness of the self-doubt that had been hiding within me, and the fact that the remedy was sprinkled all around. It felt as if the grandmotherly presence of the mica was whispering in my ear, "Don't worry, you're good, my girl." Nearly all my classmates were out of sight by this point, looking for more exotic specimens, but I couldn't put down this piece of mica. It was a mirror, and the self-acceptance I saw within it was exactly what I needed in order to heal. The breeze lifted the leaves of the maples and ruffled the hair at the back of my neck. My feet, planted in the same place, had warmed the surface of the earth to the temperature of my body, so I could no longer tell the difference between my soles and the soil. The mica in my hand winked like Morse code, and I received the message. It was so brilliant and simple, I could weep. The earth wants us to see our goodness, because this is where the healing begins. What brought you here? Several years before my encounter with the mica, I had packed my car with everything I could fit from my tiny apartment in Brooklyn and had driven all day through a torrential spring rain to reach the Blue Ridge Mountains by nightfall. Having been accepted to the Chestnut School of Herbal Medicine, I left my whole life in the city to begin anew down south. At the time, I thought I understood what herbalism was. Looking back now, I realize I didn't have a clue. That first day in school, I was the only one in class who didn't know what a tincture was or how to make a cup of loose leaf tea. I remember sitting awkwardly at the potluck lunch, balancing a full plate of food on my lap, barely able to eat. It was only a matter of time, I thought, before someone figured out I was a fraud. Looking back, I can still feel how strong my self-doubt was. Luckily, my fire to learn was even stronger. As I settled into the mountains, I dove headfirst into school, dedicating myself to an apprenticeship with earth that would become a bridge into my life's work. After graduating from herbal school, I started a small products business called One Willow Apothecaries. For the first few years, I sold herbal medicines and offered consultations out of my home. As I grew, the business grew as well, transforming from a straightforward herbal products business into a multidisciplinary school where people could learn to access their own soulful connection with the earth. Into my teaching, I incorporated everything I was learning about how to connect with the living world: ecology, mycology, geology, and earth-based mystic traditions. Soon, I began speaking at conferences across the country, submitting those first applications to present with only a few years of teaching under my belt, but with a passion as direct and distilled as an essential oil. I led retreats and took people out into the woods for immersive workshops. Eventually, I launched an online school. Today, over a decade since my first awkward day in class, One Willow has become an international center for education, and I have found my true calling as a guide, someone who helps people tap into their own profound connection with the earth and the ground of their deepest selves. As my work evolved over the years, I kept encountering the same question: how did you get here? Whenever someone asked me this, I knew what they were really wondering. How did you get to this place of making a livelihood from communing with the natural world? And how can I too? But I can never answer this question without first talking about those early days in the mountains. and I can't speak to how I ended up in the mountains, bare-souled and seeking connection as if my life depended on it, without talking about what came before. Everything you've experienced in your life is like the seashell's ground to sand, that wind-swept shoreline that has led you to this moment. As strange and winding as the path sometimes seems, dipping in and out of the tide, or disappearing into the surf. In the end, the path is always perfect because you arrived. Normally, when people ask me what brought me here, I say that I moved to the mountains to study the plants and stones, to be close to the earth. The deeper truth is that I came to these mountains and to this life devoted to the natural world because I was in desperate need of healing. After that long, rain-soaked drive down south to start a new life, I lived in a hostel for a week before I found the falling-down rental on the edge of town that would be my home for the next 4 years. A little blue cottage from the 1920s with a floor sunk so precipitously that I couldn't put a pencil down on the kitchen table without it rolling off. To me, the place was heaven. The cottage came with a quarter acre of grassy hillside into which I could dig a garden, a quiet bedroom for studying, and a view of the folding ridgeline above the valley floor, a horizon that would become my touchstone as I began healing from the exhaustion of everything I had been through in my transition to adulthood. Although I was only in my mid-20s when I rolled out my sleeping bag that first night in the blue cottage, a week before herbal school began, I had already experienced hard things in my life. A series of abusive relationships and trauma had marked my teen years, followed closely by debilitating health issues, including a chronic pain condition called vulvodynia. Affecting the muscles and nerves of the vulva and pelvic bowl, vulvodynia can range anywhere from mild discomfort to excruciating dysfunction. Unfortunately, I was on the extreme edge of that spectrum. I was in the middle of college when I was first diagnosed. Sitting in class most days felt like being perched on a bed of nails. I counted down the minutes until I could head to the woods to be alone, lying on the earth to cry and gather my strength for the next day. For the entire duration of my undergraduate years, you could say I was in two schools. Vassar College, and the Healing Academy of Nature. My time in the lecture halls of Vassar was intellectually stimulating, and I never lost sight of what a privilege it was to be a student there. But my time outdoors was my balm, my safe space, and my soul's classroom. As a child of the Philadelphia suburbs, I didn't grow up intimately connected with nature. I knew that you could eat onion grass and that bees stung, and that dark clouds meant a possible thunderstorm, but mostly it was just one indistinct watercolor to me. When I first developed chronic health issues, my interaction with everyone and everything changed, including with nature. When the pain was the worst, the only time I ever felt truly comforted was when I was in the woods. My wounds, though invisible to most people, were seen by the living world. With the trees and the creeks, I could be my full self, aching, confused, searching, and sorrowful. I went to the woods as a wounded creature, and the forest embraced me as if I had never been anything but whole. The more connected I became, the more I could perceive the magnificent wisdom of the earth. A lifelong veil lifted from my eyes. With it gone, I saw that the more than human world was more sentient, intelligent, benevolent, and alive than I had ever realized. Now, after working with thousands of students and clients from around the world, I know this is often how we begin to heal our connection to the earth. Disaster hits, trauma ensues, the hardship of life gets flaked into a point too sharp to bear on our own, and our spirit, seeking solace, flies straight through the screen doors that separate us from the wider world. When healing is needed at the deepest level, nature will always call us back home. Not only to the oak woods or water-filled coves, but to the homes within ourselves that we have been alienated from. When speaking about those days of chronic pain, I often say that the world inside my body was so uncomfortable, I had to go outside. But I know now that the intelligence of my body was pushing me into the woods because it understood that if I visited the bright ponds lined with willows, these mirrors within the earth, I would come home to myself. My body knew that this homecoming was the first step to healing, for myself and for the world. A cheerleader for the soul. There is an interesting ecological kinship between Eastern China and Appalachia. Whenever this topic comes up, botanists will knowingly nod at each other. The forests of Eastern Asia and Southern Appalachia are so similar, ecologist George Constance remarks, that if you were swept from one to the other, you would be hard-pressed to tell them apart. Some people hypothesize that the similarity goes back to the days of the supercontinent Laurasia, when these two areas of the world were close neighbors. Despite being pulled apart by tectonic plates, these twin ecologies remain so similar over the millennia that many transplants from China do quite well here, including Japanese maples, wasabi, and Asian ginseng. As it turns out, very ancient Chinese healing traditions flourish here as well. Still living in my blue cottage 2 years after I graduated from herbal school, I stumbled across a lineage of Taoist stone medicine that was also a transplant to these mountains. Carried into the coves here by Jeffrey Yuen, an elder teacher and 88th generation Taoist priest, the Jade Purity lineage of Chinese medicine endures as a unique gem in the tradition of Chinese healing. I was in my first year of Taoist stone medicine training with Sarah Thomas, a beloved local acupuncturist and teacher of the lineage, when I visited the old mica mine and found the bedrock message of my life. The earth wants us to see our goodness because healing self-judgment is integral to the overall healing of the world. The day after we visited the mine, Sarah's whole class met for a lecture. Spread out across a dark living room in the middle of a summer heat wave, 25 students were poised with their pens on the page, ready to record the Ben Cao for mica. Called a materia medica in the Western world, a Ben Cao is the collected written wisdom about a given medicine, in this case a stone. Often culled from many different sources, including clinical experience, scientific studies, and ancient texts, the information in a Ben Cao can stretch back thousands of years. We had already received the Ben Cao of a dozen other stones. Today we were going to talk about mica. With her students nestled together on the couch, Sarah began to illuminate just why mica is so medicinal. In Chinese medicine, healing is holistic. There is no division between the body, spirit, and mind. Stones are given as a prescription, just like herbs, and each stone has its own healing affinity. Mica's expertise, we soon learned, is its ability to reflect back to us our own goodness. Called Mojishi, or membrane into the source stone, mica helps us remember our divine nature, dusting away the cobwebs that distort our ability to see our own self-worth. Mica is a mirror, and what it shows us is our true selves. Place a piece of mica on a client during a treatment, Sarah revealed, and it will remind them that no matter how hard the journey has been, they are never going to forget who they are, a divine being who is inherently good. Like a cheerleader for the soul, mica reminds us that just by being who we are, we bring light to the earth. Used in acupuncture treatment, mica can act as a rebirth stone, bringing new beginnings to a beleaguered soul and a weary world. As Sarah spoke, I wrote as fast as I could, holding back tears. It couldn't have been a more perfect confirmation of what I had felt the previous day out in that mica-dotted forest. It was the affirmation my spirit had been seeking for a long time. If I had been asked during those earlier years of chronic pain where the greatest ache was, I would have pointed to the fried nerves and muscle fibers of my pelvic bowl. No matter how much physical pain we are in, however, most hurts have their roots in our emotional soil. When I first received the diagnosis of vulvodynia in college, doctors said my only recourse was to have surgery to remove nerve endings from this area of my body. After having spent all those afternoons in the woods, witnessing how the earth healed itself after hard rains or hoar frost, I declined the surgery and decided to go my own way. It was a rocky, multifaceted road of healing that involved physical therapy, dietary changes, trauma integration, and the non-stop nurturance of the living world. But by the time I arrived at my little blue cottage in the mountains, nearly 5 years later, I was pain-free. The evaporation of the physical pain was a miracle, but even after arriving in Appalachia, a part of me knew that like mica in all its many sheets, there were still layers to be healed. In the herbal world, we talk about the spiral path of healing. As you walk deeper into your path, uncovering the source of your strength and the gifts you were meant to bring to this world, you will revisit the same lessons over and over again. With each spiral, you reach a new level of completion, compassion, and understanding. True healing isn't linear, it's a labyrinth. As we walk, we have the ability to approach the old wound with newfound perspectives and matured strengths, accessing a new level of healing with each turn. When we are holding a belief that isn't conducive to the overall growth of our souls, our spirits will try to get our attention through our bodies, sometimes with a condition or accident that is so overt we can no longer ignore what is going on within us. From there, we are taken on a journey through the layers of our emotional wounds, all the way down to the root where it all began, that first unaligned belief. Standing in the forest that day at the mine with the constellation of mica at my feet, I had what you call a light bulb moment. I picked up that small mirror and retrieved a part of my soul. With it came the truth that I had been unable to admit to myself in the aftermath of my rough early adulthood, in the wake of my diagnosis, and through the years of healing that followed. Falling into pieces like the stars embedded in the soil, I finally saw what that hidden belief was. A thought form like a burr, stuck so deep in the fibers of my being, it had until now been unconscious. Somewhere inside of me, I believed I wasn't good. The parent mirror of the earth. There are many reasons someone might start believing they're not good. A sense of inner defect can expand malignantly with overt oppression, abuse, bullying, or neglect. But it can also grow subtly, fed from a million covert sources, from religious upbringings to social media. Most of us have had experiences in life that left us questioning our basic goodness, from not fitting in at school or failing to get affirmation from a parent, to experiencing a troll on social media or losing our jobs. For those of us who care deeply about social issues or the environment, simply looking at the reality of human precipitated injustice can cause us to doubt not only our own virtue, but the basic goodness of humankind. At the center of many movements for repair is an implicit pessimism, an unspoken belief that humans, by our very nature, inevitably cause disharmony. Even though I had come so far with my healing, from New York City to Appalachia, to the other side of chronic pain and down those first steps on my path as a teacher, looking into the mirror of that mica, I glimpsed the seed of my hurt. I saw the part of me that believed I was unworthy, unlovable, deficient, and hopelessly flawed. And I felt deep tenderness for this newly exposed piece of myself. I recognized with a shock how this belief in my own unworthiness was at the heart of all the hurt I experienced in my life, including my willingness to accept abuse, isolation, and overwhelm. I also recognized that I wasn't alone. Whether we realize it or not, many of us spend much of our lives thinking we aren't enough. Underneath so many of the hardships we experience as humans is this erroneous belief. On a deep and very private level, we doubt our goodness, and that quiet worry is the very conclusion that has evicted us from our belonging, first to ourselves and then to the earth. Before mirrored glass was invented, the only way we could catch a glimpse of our own image was through the natural world. Calm waters, mica flakes, the onyx in someone else's eyes. Though today we have mirrors, cameras, and selfies, we still lack the ability to see who we truly are. With nature, however, there remains a place where it's possible to come into direct, caring contact with our soul. We need only to look into the benevolent mirror of the earth. In healthy parenting, part of a caregiver's role is to mirror their child. When children begin to have an emotional experience of themselves as individuals, a parent's job is to reflect these feelings along with the child's innate goodness back to them so that they can build self-worth along with necessary life skills. Many of us didn't experience enough of this early phase of healthy reflection. But no matter what our family of origin was like, we all continue to have access to this essential source of nurturance, because nature is the parent mirror that will never forsake us. On a very tangible level, nature is a lifelong caregiver. It is the source from which our lives are made possible. A mirror here to help us when we have lost sight of ourselves. Whenever we peek out from our hard places and hiding spaces, nature will reflect back to us the depth of our goodness. Not because the denizens of nature are objects onto which we project ourselves, or because the more than human world lacks its own personalities and sentience, but because the beings of the natural world are our kin, our elders, and our teachers. As Potawatomi author and botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer recounts in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, in some native languages, the term for plants translates to those who take care of us. We are the youngest children of creation. When we see ourselves in the wider world, we remember who we are. Living in the purely human world is unnaturally hard on the spirit. The way our neighborhoods and communities are built today, we rarely get to be with the kind elders and mirrors of the more than human world. Is it any wonder that our self-perception has become so distorted? Meanwhile, the wider world has never stopped trying to show us who we are. Some people think that nature is indifferent to humans, but I have found through my own experiences, the stories of my students, and the wisdom handed down from nearly all indigenous cultures around the world, that this simply isn't true. Nature is conscious, and it is caring. It wants to instill a healthy sense of self-compassion within us, because when self-love is intact, we truly become better citizens of the world. In a recent study, researchers found that self-compassion actually increases our sense of responsibility, morality, and empathy towards others. Stable self-esteem is also positively correlated with things like curiosity, and a desire to challenge ourselves. The ability to recognize our goodness is essential to becoming creative, compassionate, and inspired forces of change in the world. Seeing ourselves in the mirror of the earth empowers us to take care of this place we call home and bring forth our gifts for the benefit of the whole. The earth is asking us to look to the trees, the rivers, and the stones, because when we see ourselves reflected there, we become a part of everything once more. In recent years, interest in natural medicines has exploded, but the deepest healing comes from the relationships the earth is asking us to reforge. When I first started going to the woods with my pain, I wasn't just calmed by the aromatic chemical compounds of the trees. I was healed by the way they reached out to me. I still remember one tree in particular, a sprawling middle-aged maple that had been stunted from years of climbing students. I would visit this tree nearly every day, bringing small gifts like feathers I found or stones shaped like hearts. I carried pieces of leather to try to mend branches that had been broken by climbers. When no one was around, I sang to the tree. Then, one day, I was walking the familiar trail when I felt a great ball of energy bound down the path and jump straight into my chest, like I was catching a puppy in the full throttle of a happy homecoming greeting. The feeling was so visceral it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. For a split second, I actually looked around for a dog or a person. The energy was that tangible. Then I glanced down the path and realized it was the maple. My friend knew I was coming, and not only was the tree greeting me, it was welcoming me back. I felt something inside of me soften. How could I possibly be bad when I was so loved by this world? How could anything or anyone on this earth be truly bad when this world is so miraculously good? A book of mirrors. Everywhere on earth there are mirrors, clear as mica, that will show you your goodness once more. No matter where you are, in the midst of your intricate self-doubt, your spiraling path of self-recognition, there will be welcome reflections bringing you home like lighthouse beacons. Take a peek into your backyard. Stories are there to hold you, comfort you, bring you back into the fold. Go looking for yourself, and eventually you will find Micah. Common, spectacular, radiant, and familiar. Something many-layered and made to translate the light. A being who is able to withstand the heat of these times and conduct the gifts you have been given into this life. You are so much more brilliant than you realize. This book of essays that you hold in your hands is a palm stone of mica. Each page is a reflective layer here to help you see yourself. Crafted from stories in the more than human world, each essay is an affirmation from the earth. A small mirror that will show you who you are and how deeply you are beloved. Every day we are handed messages that imply something is unnatural or dysfunctional about us, whether it's shame over how long it takes us to bounce back from loss, the belief that our sensitivity is a blight, the worry that we are too small to create change, or the fear that our traumas have damaged us beyond repair. Like Micah Mirror, this book and the exercises that accompany each chapter are here to reflect back your worthiness, dissolving any man-made shame so you can begin to see how profoundly welcome you are in this world. At the heart of this book is the belief that seeing your own goodness again is a crucial part of correcting course. The earth is sharing these reflective stories with us, clear as quartz chips, because self-compassion is a force of ecological healing for the world. Underlying these stories is an understanding that the central wound of our culture, the hurt that has caused us to distance ourselves from the earth and create poisonous hierarchies of worth, is not the result of some fault in the human psyche, but the byproduct of trauma and self-judgment. As I once heard the indigenous scholar and community organizer Lila June share, paraphrasing the wisdom of her elder Patricia Davis, "In our culture, we say that people are born not in original sin, but in original beauty." So many of us assume that if we want to change the world, we must first change ourselves. But this book proffers the belief that self-acceptance is the missing piece to healing. Only when we approach ourselves with compassionate understanding can we begin to access the latent energy, ideas, innovations, and revelations that will bring us back into communion with the earth. When we begin to live from our original beauty, instead of the wounds that mire us in self-doubt, we bring the undeniable power of our creativity back into alignment with the wider dream of the world. In this book, we go on a three-part mica-lit journey. The glimmer from the natural world catches our eye and invites us to see ourselves more clearly. The mirror guides the self-recognition into the gleam of self-appreciation. And the glow enables us to embody a radiating self-compassion, a quality that is key to navigating this time of ecological hardship and cultivating the gifts we were meant to bring to this world. At the center of this book is a question answered more simply than I could have imagined when I first pulled that glowing piece of mica from the ground. In an era of such deep ecological hurt, a time when all the traumas of our disconnection are rising to the surface, what are the gifts that we, as vulnerable, fallible, and incredibly caring humans, can bring to change the tide? Within this book of essays is the answer that this world is reflecting back to us, bright as a constellation of mica flakes within the soil. Self-compassion is a gift for this world.